often asked to give as a high-profile black executive. He said Eisner's management style fostered internal dissension. "We had a this-too-shall-pass philosophy about Michael," he said, "and we also had a saying which was, 'With Michael Eisner, you're the man of the hour for that particular moment.'" Despite his frequent complaints about Roth, Eisner expanded his duties and put him in charge of television production, even more critical now that Disney had acquired ABC, as well as the film studio. That same spring, Steve Burke was thrilled when Eisner offered him a job at ABC, first as an executive vice president reporting to Iger, then as head of the ABC-owned local television and radio stations. He and Iger got along well together and were soon working closely, along with Stu Bloomberg, head of program development. Eisner was spending one day a week at ABC in New York, which gave Burke his first chance to see Eisner in action on a regular basis. Burke still looked at Eisner as a mentor, but what he saw began to give him pause. It wasn't that Eisner wasn't creative, he was, or that his decisions in isolation were wrong, but that the whole decision-making process was skewed by Eisner's presence. With Tarsus still in Tuscany and Harbert's status unclear, the pilot development process was even more chaotic than usual. Everyone was working nonstop to get ready for the upfront presentations in April, the first under Disney ownership, when the networks unveil their fall primetime schedules to advertisers in lavishly choreographed previews, followed by opulent parties, the kickoff for the sale of national advertising time. Everyone felt his or her job was on the line, especially since Eisner himself would spend 2 days watching the pilots, deciding which ones the network would pick up and when to schedule them. It was a critical season for ABC. Its long and lucrative hold on the ratings as the number one network had slipped away. Its top shows, Roseanne, NYPD Blue, and Disney's own Home Improvement, were aging, their ratings in decline. NBC had broken through on Thursday night with two new dramas, ER, which Ovitz had brokered for his client Michael Crichton, and Friends, developed by Tarsus. And it still had its Tuesday night juggernaut, Seinfeld. With its new mantra, must-see TV, NBC had captured the young, affluent, urban audience most coveted by advertisers and Eisner. During the February sweeps week, ABC had fallen to third place. At the winter affiliates meeting, Eisner had vowed, "ABC will never again come in third in a sweeps." Then, with the 1996 development season in full swing, the whole unsavory Olmeyer affair burst into public view, first in a brief item in the New York Post, then a gossip column in New York Magazine, and worst of all, an article in Time Magazine in the April 15th issue. It wasn't clear who the Post's source was, but Olmeyer mounted a furious counterattack, with Ovitz bearing the brunt of it. He told Time that Ovitz was responsible for rumors and innuendo that have no basis in fact. Michael Ovitz is the Antichrist, and you can quote me on that. Even by Hollywood standards, this was extreme. Ovitz was shocked, thought the remark was deliberately anti-Semitic, and that Olmeyer was trying to protect himself. Mr. Olmeyer had a certain set of problems which everyone was very aware of that induced